Hey everyone, it's Nellie Thomas here. How are you doing? This is Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. We hope you're loving the podcast as much as we are. A few quick things before we get into the show. For information about our fabulous live shows, which we do semi-regularly, go to nelliethomas.com and follow the links. We've just done a few in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and we'll be back for more early next year in 2024. Now, your listener calls are the backbone of this podcast. They're the best. Chuck out the rest. Take a chance. Send me in your question, your comment, your dating story, regret, anything really. We absolutely love hearing from you, and you can remain anonymous. Follow the links on my website or see the show notes for more information. To support the podcast and keep it coming out for free, please rate it on whatever app you're on now. Just pull it out. Hopefully give it a 5-star rating. That helps other people find it. Tell your mates, share it on socials, do all that stuff. If you can, please join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month and you get a bonus episode every month and some other perks. If you can't, that's also fine. Just keep listening every week for free. We can't do this without yous. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Maribyrnong in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Last but not least, if you're new to the podcast, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. Let me put it this way. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shits. So off you fuck.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nellie, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nellie, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nellie, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nellie, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Baby, mess around.
All right, let's get started. So welcome to Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And we are joined by the one and only Matt Kelly. How are you, Matt?
I am extremely well and very happy to be speaking to you.
Wonderful. Now, of course, you and I know each other from around the traps and we used to have the same management and we've been in similar spaces, but I would like you to introduce yourself because you're a man of many talents.
I guess the bulk of my work is I'm in a comedy double act called The Listies.
Yes, which many people will know.
That's nice of you to say. and it's a comedy double act, and we travel around the world making families laugh.
Yep.
And then, you know, I do some writing and directing and that kind of stuff on the side. But that's basically most of my job is making families laugh.
Yeah, is doing The Listies, which are just fabulous, fun kids shows. I've taken my kids a couple of times. It's that combination for regular listeners. The vibe of it reminds me of like Harley and Wade together. Those of you who have listened will know Harley. It's like two old friends who have a bit of toilet humour and a bit of slapstick and a bit of clowning and a lot of comedy, and it just all comes together in this sort of just joyous, I don't know, just like celebration of being in the moment, I reckon.
Oh, thank you. That's really lovely. Yeah, it's kind of like if Bert and Ernie were Australian and, grew up in the suburbs.
Oh, yeah. sort of, yeah, yeah, beautiful. I'll be Big Bird.
Okay, thank you so much.
So, as I think you know, we normally start with going back to little Matt. So I'm Ooh. Very interested in, let's say, sort of teenage Matt. Like, were you dating? Were you interested in dating? Like, what's your sort of early dating relationships journey?
A very slow start, Nelly. A very slow start to life in that capacity. But of course, being a children's performer, I've never had sex. I've just a large area down there. Like, that doesn't exist for me.
Oh, Matt.
Yeah,
being a mother, do you remember that ad? The mother of daughters. Being a mother, I've a also never had sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it'd be gross.
It would be gross and no one needs to hear about it.
Nah, well, I don't want to. Is that the end of the podcast then?
I think you do, actually. I think you do. So did you have any, like, romances in high school, or are we talking, like, after high school?
It was really funny. I had, like, I think maybe, like, a lot of country gays, I had some really intense friendships with some women that would often lead to, like, uncomfortable conversations where one person would express feelings and the other person would be like, what? Why?
What?
I thought we were friends. Oh, yeah. No. Oh, yeah.
We were talking.
Yeah.
So for purposes of clarity, you identify as a gay homosexual?
Yes, I am a gay homosexual. But again, as a children's performer, I'm not really allowed
no,
to
you're
do
not.
That.
Fair enough. Well, don't get in drag and you'll be fine. So you were in a small country town. Was the lack of romance because it was hard to come out, or had you just not developed to the point where you even knew what you were feeling? Like, what was the prohibition?
Yeah, I reckon it's that, Nelly. Like,
yeah.
I think it was that I didn't really, I wasn't romantically interested in girls, and so there was just no other option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I think that's a quite common queer story for regional homosexuals.
Yes, agreed.
And I moved to the city and then just had my mind expanded and, you know, started to plays with folks in the city and then becoming oddly fascinated with particular members of the cast and then following them around and falling in love with them and then being on the receiving end of, why don't you love me?
Oh, isn't that's the most awful, awful feeling, isn't it? When you think, and I can imagine, you know, that scenario where these girls, you know, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's also true. Like, a lot of straight women get along really well with gay men because it's a cliche, but there's some truth in the fact that gay men are more expressive and talk more and more emotionally intelligent. Not universally, don't fucking email me, email Matt. But, you know, that connection is what they're yearning for.
100%. And I also think that we grow up together learning how to share that intimacy with each other as well. Like, we kind of, I like to talk about feelings. And so I hung out with women and, like, got very well trained by the wonderful women in my life that it's important to talk about how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And it's so really important to listen to them when they talk about their feelings.
Sure is. just note to any listener, listen to feelings. You've got to be able to sit with feelings. I mean, if you can't come close to big feelings, I don't think you can have real connection. And that applies across the board, whether that your parenting, romantically, friendship. I mean, yes, there's some friends that you just have a beer with. But if you want deep connection, you have to be able to sit in difficult spaces and big, overwhelming feelings sometimes.
Yeah, and be entirely comfortable with not really knowing what to say.
Yes.
As well.
Wow, and don't you learn as you get older, most times you don't have to say anything.
Nothing at all. Shutting up is actually the best thing you can do in most situations.
Just be there, you know, just be there. Like, I used to be... Definitely, and I have to watch this in myself because I can't stand seeing people in pain. I would do that awful fixer thing. Oh, well, you should do this, Matt, or you should try this. And I learned the hard way that not only was that not helpful, it was harmful because it actually is very patronizing for the other person. when they probably know the solutions themselves. They're just not ready yet.
Yeah. Or they're just not in a place where they need that from you. They just need you to like go, oh man, that sucks.
Yes, exactly. That's hard. This is hard. And I think I had someone say to me once many years ago, like the best thing you can do is actually say, would you like me to listen or would you like a suggestion?
Yeah.
And then listen to what they say. If they say, just listen, don't fucking suggest anything. Pull back. Anyway, we're getting off track. Your first, when did you have your first boyfriend?
I had my first boyfriend when I was 25.
Yep.
I won money on a game show.
Did you? Which one?
I was on Deal or No Deal.
Oh, my God, Deal. Mm-hmm. Deal. For listeners, I'm doing the deal sign. How great.
It was an amazing experience. I'd never seen the show before
and
got pulled out of the audience and had to say to the host, I have no idea how this works, so can you just give me 2 minutes?
That's to hilarious.
Yeah. But then I was sort of like hanging. I wasn't really out then. I was sort of out to my housemates.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really doing anything about it, but it was just an easier label to apply to myself than straight, because I knew that I didn't want to be in that situation where I was like hanging out with somebody and then hurting their feelings again, like
empath, aren't you, my friend? yes, I'm getting the vibes here. So do not answer this if it's too personal, but had you had any intimate contact, however you want to take that, before that? Or are we talking, right? So, and I think this is really good for people to take on board, because a lot of our callers, I don't know, they're almost embarrassed if they're so-called late bloomers. And you're like, actually, it's very common for people to not have sex or a relationship until well into their 20s. For some people, later. It's completely normal. Yeah. It's just that we don't hear about it.
Yeah. And I think that's like, you spend a lot of time, because I'm a flamboyant, like young man, old man, middle-aged man. I kept getting that the label of gay and all of the other slurs applied to me at school. And I just 100% didn't want to be that. I didn't want those people to be right. I didn't want that. So I just sort of managed to squash it down with like a heady combination of like booze and depression.
Yes.
And avoidance. Then I won the money and I went overseas and I didn't have anybody around me who knew me. I didn't have to be anything other than me. And I just threw myself at that world. And like, I just threw myself open and was like, well, no one knows here. Like I can just do whatever.
I can be free. And that's like, you can come out in every sense of the word, you know, not just the disclosure, but like developing who you are. I've said this on the podcast before, but I think it's interesting to reflect on it in this context. One of my favorite lines from the TV show The Sopranos is the psychiatrist says, depression is rage turned inwards. And when I hear like you kind of going, oh, you know, I was so angry basically at the homophobia that you'd experienced, and so you're trying to squash it down, the only way for that to go is to make you feel like shit.
100%. I think anger, or maybe it's like a shame turned inward, but it bubbled up, and I wasn't okay in my 20s. And then I went and I don't know, fell in love and met somebody who loved me. And it was like an extraordinary feeling.
Yeah.
And all of the complications that went with that, of like having to face up to myself and my family and the expectations, all of that stuff was worth the cost of that love.
Mm. Yes.
And it, yeah.
Yes. And worth the cost of being yourself. you know, whatever that means. Like, that doesn't mean the label, but just kind of actually being free to express who Matt really is. That is, I mean, it's just not rocket science, is it? You cannot have good mental health if you're hiding any aspects of yourself, really. And so where did you meet this fella?
I met him at a gay club.
Oh, cute. Not, old school.
Just FYI. And then he was just like a wonderful, like silly, happy fella. He was just a happy man. And it was when you meet those people who just like have joy.
Yes.
Like they just have, like, that little kernel of joy that sits inside them that never goes out.
Yeah. It's contagious, Matt. So the same way we talk about how, like, anger is contagious. I mean, there's literally, you know, research into how anger rips through communities and is destructive and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't think anger is necessarily bad. You've got to know what to do with it, et cetera. But we don't talk about the fact that joy is also contagious. Being in the presence, like if we put it in a dating context, if I go on a date with someone who has that little kernel, who's joyful, it's almost irrelevant how they look, honestly. Like it's that kind of, that vibe is intoxicating and it's hot as fuck.
It was, so we would be hanging out and just like, you know, hanging out in the park in the sunshine. And I'd look over him and he'd just be kind of like looking up at the sky and I'd go, what are you thinking about?
Yeah.
And he'd go, nothing.
Oh.
And I would like, when I first sort of started hanging out with him, I would run in my head. It's like, oh, he must be thinking deep things. Like, there must be a thousand. And then, like, towards the end of the relationship, he wasn't thinking about anything. He was just there, like,
just
in
being
the
present. That oh, my Lord. So, we have two dogs. One was purchased, one's a rescue dog. And the big one, he is like a really stupid labradoodle. And my youngest, who's 11, she always says, wouldn't it be nice to be chewy and just be like dumb and pretty and just like move through the world, just not like thinking about things. But I'm Ralph, which is the rescue dog who's like on fucking high alert all the time. And he's like thinking 17 moves ahead.
You know, like. Yeah, he carries a trauma legacy with him. And poor little thing.
And so how? Oh, don't worry. He's hit the jackpot, mate. How long were you two together?
We were together for a bit over 2 years and then that ended not well. But I think it was, I just wanted love and I wanted more from it. And in hindsight, like I understand that now, but I was devastated. Like it was very sad.
Yeah. So you wanted, and again, you share as much or as little as you want. You wanted a love that he couldn't give.
Yeah. Cause I was on the other side of the world and I was going to move home. And then he came to live here for a bit, for like a year. And then at the end, I just couldn't understand why he didn't want to like stay. Like, why would you end a good thing? And then in hindsight, I was like the kind of just chatting it out with friends as an older human going it was over for him way before it was for me. And he just wrote out the clock on it, which I was mad about for a while. But then, I don't know, there was a kindness in that as well. There's some cleanness of that break. And
breakups are messy. You can look back in retrospect, and I've certainly done this in other relationships and gone, I probably was out sometime before, but I wasn't consciously aware of that because, as you say, you don't throw away something that's good. You know, maybe there's enough good there that you think, oh, we can make it work, or I can make it work, or you can look back and go, oh, that was never going to happen, but that doesn't mean it's malicious.
No. And I do think that there's something kinder in going, I have to go because I'm going back home rather than go, I'm just a bit bored by you. Like, you want to settle down. You want to settle down and I don't. And then there's a lot of, like, difficult conversations that come from that, but just offering the kind of immovable, like, just geography. You can't shift space. So
And have you always wanted that kind of like permanency, like a relationship, capital R, or have you been happy to play the field, or it's you'd always been yearning for that partnership?
I think because I didn't think I could fall in love.
Why?
Well, just like because I was squashing down any love feelings for so long growing up. Then when I discovered it, I just got real drunk on that love drug. Like, nom, 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 nom.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which would have been a freaky thing to be on the other end of.
This is really interesting. So in your case, from what I'm hearing, you'd had to repress your sexuality, whatever we want to call it, for so long that you sort of became disconnected even from the possibility of being in love. I think for other people that will also come if you do have a trauma background, or you have, 100%. You know, if you're into attachment styles, go and look all that stuff up. So you might not, even unconsciously, you might be kind of going, this is not something available to me. So when it is available to you, oh my God, you can be intense. Right. Oh, and that can be great if they're also intense, but if you're intense and they're not, they're terrified. Am I speaking your language?
Yeah, 100%.
Were you a little bit, do you think you're a bit claustrophobic? Like, what were you?
I reckon I was that. I don't like the phrase needy because I think it's a bit...
it's mean.
It's mean. It's gendered often as well. Men are never needy. Women are always needy.
Yeah.
But I was. I just needed constant affirmation and reassurance. It's like this thing, this lovely thing that I'm experiencing and that you look at me with sometimes and it feels amazing. Can I have it again? Want it again.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
Just a note on that, I reckon, because we get a lot of that, and I've definitely experienced that on both sides, actually. I think personally, and I'd love to know what you think, I reckon the way to deal with that for me, if I had a partner who felt like that, as long as they could express it and say, I understand that this is not about what you're giving or not giving. This comes from another place and it was there before you came along. And so I will need or would like reassurance on this front, and it might take me a while to not need it so much. I would be okay with that. It's when you're needy and you don't know.
Yeah.
And then that makes the other person feel like they're not giving enough.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It really does. And I don't know whether you get to the place to be able to ask for, like, or to just be aware of what kind of reassurance you need.
Yeah.
Without having, like, crossed that line a bunch of times.
Well, cross that line, but also it's a bloody vulnerable thing to do. Like, I've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, I was put on my first diet in prep, right?
Oh,
5 years old. Like, I wasn't even fat. It's a whole thing. But that means I've grown up in a culture, but also in a situation where my body was constantly scrutinized and it was either too big or too small or too something or too whatever. Even though I'm a lot further along in that journey, if I'm dating you, I am going to need reassurance on that front.
Yeah.
But I know that that's not because that's nothing to do with them, right? And that pre-exists them. So to be able to kind of go, this is a wound for me and it will be helpful if you can know that and be sensitive around it.
Yeah.
And tell me I'm hot constantly. That would also be great.
Yeah. I need, I'm funny all the time.
You're funny and hot.
Oh, so are you. What a bonus.
If only this was a video, the dream team.
People would be of all persuasions.
So after this relationship, and that's a big one, your first one being 2 years, like that's not just dating. That's like you're right in there. How long? Because I know you're in a long-term relationship now. What happens between the two?
The invention of Grindr.
Yeah, right. So you get on the apps.
Did the apps. Not. I didn't do the apps because I'm a children's performer and
of course. Someone who looks a lot like you. We're talking early 2000s?
Yeah. And then I met my current partner in the kind of early days of Facebook, there were a bunch of queer parties that were happening in Melbourne, and I went to one of those and met him there, old school again. And then I went on tour for about 4 months, and we chatted every day. And then I came back and was like, "This is a thing, right?" Like, that, and he was like, "Yeah, this is a thing.
It's a thing."
And that was 12 years ago, something now.
How lovely! So, first of all, can I make about me and go, "Is that going to happen for me, Matt? Is that going to happen for me? I want to go to the queer party and meet someone and chat for 4 months and then be 12 years together." Anyway, let's put that to the side. What's he like?
He's beautiful. He's kind and funny and I don't know. We haven't seen each other for a while, so I'm a bit he's an excellent human. He's so wonderful. He's a muso. So he's got kind of like artistic fella. He's done quite a lot of therapy.
Green flag.
Yeah, he was sad for a while and is not afraid of talking about feelings. It takes him a while to get there. Yep. But once you are having those conversations, he has sort of, and I've had a fair bit of therapy too, so he has a therapeutic language that we can kind of like talk about our feelings with.
He can do it. He can do it. I mean, as we say, it's overused, but he's doing the work. Do you know that TV show First Dates Australia?
Oh, yes, I 100% do.
Obsessed. Like, it's my favourite because it's not that horrible gotcha bullshit. I love it.
Nah.
Long story short, they asked me to apply.
Oh, yeah.
And I went, fuck it, I'm going to do it. So I applied. And when I was doing the questionnaire, they said, "What's your dating deal breaker?" And I said, "They have to have been in therapy or in therapy." Like, from this age, I'm 49, like I'm pretty experienced. I know enough to know that you cannot move through life without some help with insight into your like emotional regulation, your triggers, your wounds. I'll accept almost all the wounds as long as you know what they are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And you can manage them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're able to own up to them and have somebody call you on them and things as well. Yeah.
And have the conversation, you know, sit in the difficulty, whether it's like I've hurt your feelings, you've hurt my feelings, whatever. That's going to happen. That's humans. So can you actually sit in that without not never spiraling, but without like spiraling out of control? And it's particularly in my case, I can't do nasty. Like if someone's like a nasty fighter or even sarcastic or what, I can't do that.
When you're in a fight with somebody and you can tell that they just want to win, and then you get into point scoring and then it just goes bitter and
Well, you know when you're chatting, you know, sometimes like you're having that conversation. I've had this in dating a bit, and then you kind of go, "Oh, what are we fighting now?" Like it's
wait.
What?
Oh, that is.
I was just talking.
And I imagine with someone like you, Nelly, who's funny, and then your humor, like it switches between like an earnest situational joke, and then sometimes you'll do an ironic thing.
Yes.
If that person's 100% switched into what's going on, they have missed an ironic like call that you've made, and then suddenly you're in an argument. You're like, wait, no, we were just.
I think actually I find that interesting because, and you know this because you're a performer and you know lots of comedians, in real life I'm much more earnest. I mean, I'm earnest on this, but I'm much more earnest in real life. And in some ways I have the opposite where in a dating situation they're expecting me to be funny or expecting me, like, so there'll be situations where they are sarcastic, for example, and it hurts me. They don't expect me to be as sensitive as I am because, you know, people see stand-ups and kind of go, oh, they can take anything. Like, no, not if we're dating, doll. You know, like you don't. It's a whole different thing for me to get on stage and make a joke about myself. Very different for you to make a joke about me because I'm being vulnerable with you.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? When you're in front of, it's in a lot of ways, it's easy to be on stage in front of 1,000 people than it is to be sitting across from somebody.
Oh, 100%.
Even now, like even doing this is like, I just come from doing a show and, you know, there were a couple of hundred kids in the crowd and that's easy for me. But talking about me and my relationships is
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
Do my last relationship question for you, do you like being in a sort of stable long-term relationship? Is that your, because I'm starting to develop this idea that some people, that's how they're built, and there's other people who that it's just not for them. You know, they will do like a relationship for a year or a couple of weeks or 2 years or whatever, and that's how they're going to be in their life. And in some ways they should just accept that.
Yeah. And the quicker they get to that realization, the quicker they get to happiness.
I think so.
Oh, I couldn't imagine any moment not being with Andrew as we get older. Like, he's excellent. It's amazing. And there's, the episodes that I've really enjoyed of the podcast are the folk who are long-term single, and having that as a label is really useful. Because what it does is it allows, and Wes's episode, and then there's somebody else who you're talking about who they're talking to, and they had just sort of stepped into owning that.
Davis, I think you're talking about, yes.
Yeah, and just it was great because I'm surrounded by people who are long-term single, and the world looks at them as objects of like, oh, isn't that a shame?
You poor thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you poor thing.
Yeah.
But like none of these women are sad about that.
They're fucking living La Vida Loca.
Yeah.
You know? And I tell you what, there's nothing sadder than being in a relationship you don't want to be in.
Miserable. Yeah.
So we're trying to, as you would know, we're trying to rip up that script. Can I ask you one more relationship question?
Yeah, there's just a lot of ways that you can be lonely, and you can be lonely inside a relationship. You can be lonely inside a marriage. I didn't mean
to. No, to be honest with you, I think what I hear, what I've experienced, being lonely when you quote unquote shouldn't be, is far worse than the loneliness of singledom. You know, I'm not going to lie, there's times as I'm single, there's times, you know, I had a bereavement recently and I found myself going, I just wish someone was here to give me a cuddle. You know, like, it's not that it's all beer and Skittles, but the worst scenario would be if you were in a relationship and didn't get that cuddle. Right? Because you're meant to get it. It's actually far easier to process if it's not like right in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my goodness, imagine.
I've punched you in the face with that one, haven't I?
Oh, it's just Anyway.
I think it's common, mate. The question I wanted to ask you is, what do you think is your biggest strengths in relationships?
Oh.
I mean, obviously you're a sex god. You've never had sex, but if you were to have sex, you'd be very good at it. But other than that.
I don't mind saying I'm sorry. That's never a...
Very good.
Inside our relationship. I also am interested in how we got to the conflict point. Like, not when we're arguing and what happened during the argument, because sometimes that's a sort of a useless thing to look at. I think sometimes when Andy and I do bicker, I'll go, wait, hang on, how did we get to here?
Yeah.
And then...
Perfect. That genuine curiosity. If you're going head to head to be right, and I've done that, and I'm sure you've done it, like we've all done it, when you get into that thing of like, but I just have to win this argument. The real connection is when you sit down and go, I want to understand how we got here. Like, I don't understand why you're hurt, or you don't understand why I am, but we can work it out if we can sit in this enough.
Yeah. And then the wonderful thing about Andy is he goes along with that. He's interested in that as well. So
you got to both do it. You can't. Yeah. God knows you can't drag someone to insight, right? You've got to both be prepared to do that, and it's uncomfortable.
I think that's why your therapy deal breaker is an interesting one as well, because what therapy does, what it indicates about a human being, is that they are curious about themselves. They're not afraid of what they might find at the bottom of the pit. They're not afraid that they're going to sit across from somebody, a therapist, and that therapist might go, "Oof, you're really broken.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry. You're busted. We can't fix you."
Yeah.
I like that.
And if you've got a decent therapist, you're used to being challenged. Like, nothing shits me more. I mean, I joke about it, but it's also real, where, like, my therapist, I fucking hate when she's right, you know? there's some things you don't want to see, right? There's some things you don't want to see, and then it might take you a week, it might take you 6 months, it might take you 5 years, and then you go, oh, shit, you were right. But you can't fix what you can't acknowledge.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it might be, it's not some nirvana where you never have any shit. It's about going, I know that's a thing for me. So if you and I were dating, for example, and I know there's a particular, it's on the cards. If you've got an abandonment wound, you know, if you're constantly worrying about getting it back, well, if you don't text me back, that's going to be activated. Is that your fault? No. Right. So you need to know that yourself. Oh, I'm having a reaction to something that happened before Matt even came into my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how you get there without therapy. I don't.
Nah. And being able to kind of like take that moment of like being able to go, well, if I don't hear from you, that's an abandonment thing. Mm. That able to offer that insight to somebody else stops them from like filling in the gaps in their mind of what where it comes from.
And everyone's overthinking.
Trust me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. All right. So this is not so much a meme. It's actually a quote from probably, I don't know, would I say she's my favorite author? She's definitely in my top five. It's a Jeanette Winterson quote. She says, this was recently, I imagine she must be late 50s by now, maybe even in her 60s. She said, I know now after 50 years that the finding, losing, forgetting, remembering, leaving, returning never stops. The whole of life is about another chance. And while we are alive till the very end, there is always another chance.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful?
Isn't that lovely?
What do you think of it?
I think that's so lovely. I've got a lot of friends in my life at the moment who are going through massive, like big transitions.
Yeah.
I've got a hippie cousin who is like one of my dearest people in the world, and she's super into astrology, and I don't know whether that's a thing that you're into, but she said there's some massive cosmic event that is happening that is causing everyone's life to go through change.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing to offer those people in my life, because a few of them are like kind of women in their like late 50s who have had partners that have, you know, gone for various reasons, and they're looking for a way to sort of to feel reborn or experience something that they wanted to. And my strategy with that is to always just say yes, like if you want it, just do it.
And if you still breathe, then there's hope.
Give it a go.
Yeah, whatever that looks like. And it doesn't have to be, I'm going to find another partner.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Might be, well, I want to have some situationships. I want to try one night stand for the first time in my life. I want to go and pash someone at a party, right? Yep. It's not prescriptive. It can be whatever there is in loss, also opportunity.
Yeah. And I think that's also like, It's funny, you and I were chatting just before the podcast about being full, about like not being able to handle the tech, going like, I've learned enough things.
Yes.
I've learned enough. And I find myself getting to that point and then but then like thinking about what's going on in this country at the moment and going, this is the conservative mindset is the one that goes, I will not accept any more loss or change.
Yes, that's right. I'm done.
Not accept that anymore. And I'm going to do whatever I can to stop that. And so the idea that just acknowledging that, the changing, the renewal, the giving, the taking continue.
Look, if you're fighting change, if you're fighting against change, as far as I'm concerned, you are shouting into the wind. You know, life is change, and we try and assert control, and there's some things we can control, most we can't. I mean, if we didn't learn that through COVID, we're never going to learn it. Like, we're not in charge, you know? Like, we have some agency, but we are not in charge. And so once you get to that place of acceptance, and in this dating and relationships context, to me, that's all terrifying and freeing at the same time, because you go, that means I've got to take the person that I am on a date with or in a relationship with or whatever for how they are right now and how this is right now. And we can do the best that we can do to make it work, but there is no guarantee.
And in also acknowledging that, like, you kind of accept that you also don't have to take that person as well. That you can just walk away from the person. I've got a friend of mine who tried online dating, tried all of the strategies, and never ended up finding anyone. And the final date they went on was somebody. She sat down with them and, like, not even a hello, not even a, you know, nice dress, like no compliment, like no decent human being acknowledgement. The guy went, so you probably noticed I had some motorcycles on my profile picture. And then and then she stood up and just put $20 down to pay for the Negroni and went, I'm done. I can't. And just left him there.
This is a woman over 40.
100%. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, totally. And this is what I mean. I'm the same as you. Like, when people talk about aging, it's usually in, I mean, this is changing a bit, but it's usually in, I don't know, kind of sad, a sad tone is not the right word, but my brain's struggling to find one. I look back at my 20s and I go, I would have stayed on that date and would have endured it.
Right.
For 4 hours or more, and probably even seen them again. And whereas from this age, I'm like, oh, mum hasn't got time for that shit.
Yeah. And what you would have done too, Nellie, is because you're an empathetic person, you would have sat in that date and made that person feel better about themselves for like the entire length of the date, and all the time costing yourself that emotional energy.
Yeah. I will say the only exception I've made to that, I'll be careful with details, but I went on a date with a woman some time ago and she kind of did a version of that. So we sat across each other and she just literally, Matt, talked at me for 2 hours. She was a life coach. It's a whole thing. Talked at me without drawing breath, didn't ask a single question. There was part of my brain going, get up and leave. And then the other part of it was like, this is fascinating. Like, how long can you go for? Do you know what I mean? It was like watching a car accident. It was like I couldn't leave. I wanted to just see. It literally went for a couple of hours.
Oh, my goodness. It's
wild.
Wild.
Wild. But I kind of look back at it with fondness. Clearly nothing happened. But I look back at it with fondness in a way of going, just people are fascinating. Like, what did you think you were going to get out of it? Like, why would I see you again? When you literally didn't even say, you know, what do you do on the weekends? Or let alone, what do you think about life or dating or not a single question in the entire dinner?
Wow.
I know.
As a man with a lot of single friends who go on lots of dates, that is not a unique story.
Oh, no.
I have heard a version of that story many times.
Are you ready for a listener call?
Oh, goodness.
Hi, Nelly. It's me again, the 51-year-old widow who's fallen in love with a slightly younger man who has three young children. So I'm not really in too much of a rush to be moving in with him, although I would like for that to happen sooner rather than later. I really just wanted some advice about what types of things we need to be putting in place before we do decide to do that. So I think I probably need to speak with a lawyer and an accountant, and I just don't know exactly who and what. I think I want to rent my house out while we buy something new together, because I think financially that might actually work the best. You were asking about his children. I really like having a role in the lives of his children. They live primarily with their mum, but they spend a lot of time with my partner, and I really like that. I like that about him. I like that about us.
Okay, so I'm going to give you some backstory. So this caller, now I hope I get the details correct. She's called into a previous episode. She's widowed. So her husband died. From memory, her children are a bit older, as in they might be late teens, even adults. She's started seeing a guy who's got young kids. And if I remember correctly, the advice myself and my co-host gave at the time was kind of around take it slowly, be careful financially, and also don't feel that sort of cultural pressure and expectation that you have to parent again if you don't want to. Mm. Now, by the sounds of her call, she's happy to be a somewhat parental figure, which is great as long as that's what she wants. But we're talking about, again, this is very specific, I think, to dating later in life. You're more likely to have assets, kids, superannuation, all the things that no one gives a shit about when you're 25, but really matter when you're 49, right? Yeah. So what do you hear in that? Do you have any advice?
I mean, I'm very qualified to give financial advice. Like my finances are, they're brilliant.
I can give the final, I'll start actually, because I contacted WIRE, which is the Women's Information Referral Exchange, and it's an organisation I've been involved with for many years. They're based in Victoria in Australia, but they take calls from basically anywhere. And yep. I contacted their CEO about this call and said, you know, can she call? And she's like, absolutely, you can call from any state.
Brilliant.
There are not comparable organisations in other states, which blows my mind. But I also talked to a lawyer. And the lawyer said to me, and this is not individual legal advice, let me put all the disclaimers in place, but I would absolutely be looking at what's called a binding financial agreement or a BFA. And what that means, I guess it's sort of like a version of a prenup. What that means is if you decide to move in together, that you spell out very clearly, say, I already own this house, I will retain ownership of it if the relationship ends or whatever the things are, but 100% get legal advice.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's a way that situation could, I imagine, get sufficiently messy because of the kind of extra external pressures of kids and existing relationships between somebody and their ex. There's a way that situation could spiral and become hurtful, spiteful, vengeful, and people would go after perhaps. Money is a very good way or a very efficient way to sort of hurt somebody. And
that doesn't mean, dear caller, that either Matt or I are saying that this lovely bloke is going to do that. But what it does mean is I can tell you, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard this story. You do not know someone till you break up with them. And you do not want to find out the hard way that they want 2/3 of your super or the house that you own or what. Like, you must particularly as a middle-aged woman, frankly, and a mother, you must protect your financial security.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also imagine going through that process with somebody, there's a certain amount of personality that would be revealed from doing that.
Correct.
Like if you can sit in front of somebody and say, I need you to sign a piece of paper that just like carves you out of the life that I have built for myself. Mm. And if they react badly to that, there's an opportunity to talk about the relationship in that moment. Mm. And there's something you could learn from just asking those questions and putting that out there on the table.
Do you know what? Because to me, Matt, it's the equivalent. This is relationship, but this one's a dating one that we've talked about before. It's the equivalent of if a woman's going on a date with a straight guy, and I'm not hashtag all straight guys, et cetera, you know, take all the caveats. But if a woman's going on a date with a guy, the reality of the world is that there's going to be some element of her concern for her safety. If mm-hmm. she says to that guy, I'll come back to your house, but I need the address and I'm going to text it to my friend, and he loses his shit, you fucking leave that date. Right. Mm. He should have enough emotional intelligence to know that women exist in a world in an unsafe way in this dating context, and that you need that reassurance. And I'd say the same in this case. If she sat down with this lovely man and said, I'm a single mum, I'm in middle age, I cannot give away my financial security, we need to sort this out with the BFA. Mm. If he wouldn't do that, for me, that would be like such a red flag that it would be a deal breaker.
Yes, absolutely. And you'd know the statistic maybe, but the highest growing homeless rate is women over 65 or something like that.
It's women over 50.
50, is it? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's women over 50 in Australia, the most rapidly growing rate of homelessness. And a lot of it is due to separation and divorce.
Yeah, that's
it. And then having been out of the workforce, so you don't have the same amount of superannuation if you had kids, all of that sort of shit.
The only thing
I'd say, I mean, you're a grown woman and you do whatever you want to do, but I think both Matt and I, our face went a bit weird when you said you wanted to buy a house with the guy.
Yeah.
Personally, if you take it or leave it, but my advice would be rent for at least a couple of years.
Definitely. Definitely. Try before you buy.
Keep your house that you own, rent it out, so that if for some reason this relationship does end, you've always got your house to go back to. But rent with him if you want to move in with him.
Yeah, because there is a real benefit in just knowing what that will be like. Maybe I have a friend who lived with their partner for a little while, and then it turned out that it became extremely difficult for them to exist with the kids in the house. That there was so much turmoil going on in that relationship that their presence in the house was actually causing quite a lot of conflict.
Yeah.
And then nobody saw it coming. The kids did what kids do, which was like they threw an unknowable
in the works.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
And so then what they did was they just rented a place around the corner. And
yeah, beautiful.
When they were there when the kids were over, and it was just this sort of. And once they weren't living in the house together, everybody's relationship was so much better. But they didn't see that coming.
It's called Living Apart Together. It's a movement. You can Google it. I'll put some links in the show notes, particularly in this context. And I reckon I would strongly, if I ever fall in love again, and it's a long-term thing, I would love that scenario where you're close by, but where you're not putting the pressure on your children, their children, each other to have to Brady Bunch it. It's certainly not for many years, right? Because it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with for everybody. I actually have, I don't think they'll mind me saying, I'll check and I'll take it out if they would mind me saying, lesbian couple friends of mine who've been together for a few years. So they both were in long-term relationships that ended. They've come together, beautiful couple. One of them has children who would be sort of early 20s, and the other one's got teenagers. The one with the kids in the early 20s is like, I'm not going through the teen years again.
Yeah.
I'm not living with you until the kids are grown up.
Mm.
I respect that completely.
Yeah, definitely.
She's done it. She's done the hard yards. She doesn't want to do it again. It's not, no diss on the kids.
No.
It's hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the other thing that sort of pinged for me when you were saying that they had older kids. It's nice to spend time with kids, and I love them. My entire life is making them feel happy and safe in the world.
Yeah.
But there are moments where they don't, and they don't have the faculties to process it the same way that an adult does. And then you end up in high conflict zones in your house and not having a space to go to when you've already done that. Mm. Yeah, that's a big deal.
And I tell you what, I can say from personal experience, menopause combined with puberty in the same house. Oh, mate, that's a bloody fringe show right there. No one's buying tickets to it. That there's a lot of big feelings.
Yeah. There's just a lot of people sitting in the audience intensely triggered by the whole thing. Yeah.
Someone's storming out. Someone's crying. There's estrogen patches. It's a whole thing.
There's hot flashes and heads in
hot flashes. I've got a fan. There's like zits. It's a scene.
The good thing is that everyone has zits and is growing whiskers. So that's
That's true. And I will say my beautiful teenager does lay in bed with me and pluck my chin hairs. So who am I to complain? there's an image for you. Hot. Why am I single, Matt? Why?
Why isn't this a video podcast? Like, is that content? Like, maybe you could start a channel where you video and interview people who are plucking your chin hairs.
Babe, OnlyFans. I'll pay off my mortgage. If people will pay to see feet, they'll pay to see my chin being plucked. All right, I've got a letter for you. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Dear Nelly, I was dating a woman who is about 12 years younger than me. I'm 52. Just for context, I don't even know if this matters, but it's an anonymous letter, but it's a female, so it's a same-sex relationship.
Yeah.
She broke up with me, which is fine, but then started following me on social media and liking all my posts.
What?
Is this a millennial thing? Is it some sort of message? Should I ignore it? I don't know why she dumped me, then take an interest in my life. Help!
Oh, my goodness. That's guilt, isn't it? The person.
What is it?
I think it's the younger person broke up with somebody, felt intensely guilty about doing it, and then are just like, oh, no, we're still friends. We are.
Is that what it is? Oh, so we're keeping a connection?
Yeah.
Because I immediately thought, I thought they want to see what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, there's obviously that, I reckon, too. Yeah, spying. But then why? But you can spy. Like, you can lurk. You're not as conspicuous.
Oh, yeah, liking.
Liking.
You're right.
Yeah. I think it's just like, I'm not a bad person. I'm not. Yes. We're friends now.
Do you know what I wonder? Because, and again, I find this really hard. I'm not a Luddite by any means. I do my own website and all that sort of stuff, but I'm not great with social media. Like, I've only been on Instagram a couple of years, etc. But I think there's some kind of generational thing where these things do mean something different. I've experienced this in dating where I'm like, I'm not even reading that, but you're trying to send me a message. Like, I think that perhaps what this woman's doing is liking your post, seeing if you will respond. Like, they're trying to sort of go send like a little test balloon to go, will you message me? Like, maybe we can rekindle.
Oh, do you know what you could do in this situation? And it's a radical piece of advice. That send them a message and go, why do you keep liking my posts? I mean, just putting that out. Strategy.
Call it. Matt.
I think a product of that social media generation, but there's a long tail to relationships that social media allows. And I don't, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
I think you got to call it. Otherwise,
I'm
going to
do
sit.
A combo of our advice. If it's giving you the shits, just block her. Because you don't have to have anyone on your social media that you don't want, and you don't owe anyone an explanation. But if you want to know what's going on, Matt's 100% right. Just call it. Because if they're going, oh, I just want to remain friends, then you can say, I don't or I do.
Yep.
If they're actually trying to draw you back into communication, you can also go yes or no.
Yeah.
But call it. Like if it's some passé game, who's got the time and emotional energy for that?
Yeah, no.
But it's fucking weird.
It's very odd. And it's very, very odd. There's a thing that I think you learn as you get older, as well, that you don't have to be friends with your ex. And that's not the first time that's radical piece of advice has been said on this very podcast. But there's a thing where when I broke up with my first partner, I was devastated and we were trying to be friends. But then I had a drink with a friend of mine who was older, and he said, but you were never friends in the first place. You don't have that to fall back on. You don't know what it's like to just chat about the weather.
Yes.
So if you're after a friend situation, returning to a friend situation, you have to build a friendship.
And you need time. And I will say this is very specific to this situation. And again, it's hard not to speak in stereotypes, but I tell you what, this is a real issue in Leso land.
Because my God.
Like the default is we'll still live together even if we've broken up, let alone we'll still be friends. And there's some logistical reasons for that, because you're going to see each other in the community and you don't want it to be acrimonious and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you also, my favorite phrase, and particularly if you have to co-parent, but even in that situation, you can be friendly, not friends, right?
Yeah.
You can be friendly, you can be courteous, you can be, if you see that person out, of course, you can have a hug even. Like you can say, how you doing? That doesn't mean that you message every day or you're on each other's social media or you're at the birthday party or whatever. Like some people you can do that with, but it requires time. There has to be a period of time of no contact, I reckon.
Always. Yeah, definitely. Like, and that time allows you the time to, like, do the hurt, hate, heal thing.
Yeah.
And then build something new. And in that time you go, is it worth it?
Yeah.
Like, is it worth it?
Do I even want this from my joint because I'm meant to? Put it this way. Can you imagine yourself sitting down with that person and telling them about a date you went on? If you can't, you're not friends.
Yeah. And the opposite is true. Like, can you handle them telling them?
Correct. And if you can't, you're not past it yet. Give yourself some more time. You might be in a year. You know, like you can definitely be friendly with exes with some time.
Yeah.
But don't put that pressure on yourself that we have to stay in contact or I'm a terrible person. Or they are.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. No shade on my ex. Tell me stupid shit an ex of yours has done, as trivial or as, you know, deep as you want.
Oh, well, I had one that ground their teeth. Oh, my God.
Well, get a mouth plate.
Yeah, 100%. I would just go, you really have to do something about that.
Yeah.
What else? I had an ex who had never eaten pumpkin.
I don't like pumpkin. Does that count?
No, but it was a thing like, it's a thing that I find interesting about men is that they're very happy to be like infantilized. Like there are all of these men in the world who are just like, oh, I don't like that. Like a child.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not trying it, not doing it.
No, it's different. I don't like it. No, I've never had that before.
Yeah.
That makes me crazy.
So that is 100%. I don't know if it's a red flag. It's definitely an amber flag.
Right? Yeah.
If someone's not prepared to, not just food, but if they're not prepared in any way to countenance a different way of doing things, being in the world or what, how can you grow together?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very, very, very good point.
You're going to have to bend to their way.
Who is just going to be stuck.
Yeah.
And
I'm not bending unless it's fun. Right. So.
No. Yeah. Plus, we're over 40 now, so bending's much harder than it used to be. Do you know what I mean? I can do all the
yoga. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm quite limber. He's a 10, but so tell me, like, who's the hottest celebrity you can think of?
Oh my goodness.
Like a real hot and tot hottie, like a Keanu Reeves.
Is Stanley Tucci?
Oh, Stanley Tucci.
I love Stanley Tucci.
You're sapiosexual, aren't you? You 100% are. Yeah, it's between the ears. Yeah. Gotcha. Now I know where we are. Should have asked that at the start. So you and Stanley Tucci are sitting on a date. Let's assume you're single or you have Andy's permission. And he does something that you cannot get past. What would that be? He's a 10, but...
If he said, oh, I don't really care, you order. Like, that would make me crazy. It's like, what are you talking about? No, we have to, like, you have to show me some interest in what we're going to eat, because eating is my greatest pleasure, and it's what I would expect from Stanley Tucci now that I think about it, because it's probably almost the entire reason why I like him. But I think if you are, like, what that would indicate to me, to turn to something flippant serious, is that I've made an offer to you, like, of going out to dinner, and then you've just passed the buck to me. And it's like, we're going to share this together.
Yes.
I'm not ordering food for you. You've got to be, you have to participate in this.
Oh, see, this is so fascinating to me, because I've been that person who's kind of gone, and it is, if I can be deep, but it's true. Sounds ridiculous. For me, it's like class anxiety, you know, because I grew up like working class. When I'm in a fancy restaurant, I get stressed. Even though I love food and I go to those places, if I was had the added stress of a date, I can imagine myself kind of going, oh, you know, I'm happy for you to order whatever. Having said that, I have also dated people who wouldn't make decisions. And because I can be, whether it's in reality or their perception, the alpha, they expect me to make all the decisions all the time, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it also, that other, going back to what we were talking about before, that to me is like a trigger that, for me, it indicates that you're happy to just be like infantilized. Like, I'm a baby, I can't.
Yes.
You would have. It's like, no, we are two adults. We're about to enjoy a meal together. If it's a fancy restaurant, you have to participate in those moments. For me,
taught me something. I'm going to take that on board, because I'm trying to rewrite. Like, I don't want to be anyone's mum, right? I've already got kids. So I don't want to parent someone. I need someone who is, you know, going to hold me as much as them, to put it in that sort of conceptual framework. So I think you're right. If you start getting signs like that, well, you decide, you tell me where to park, you order the wine, you arrange the date, or that's someone who wants a parent.
Yeah.
Not hot.
Yeah. Not hot. Not hot at all.
My legs are closing as we speak.
You're putting your tits back in your top.
My tits are back in. The rack is back on the rack. That's a really good tip. I'm going to take that forward. And next time, and I'm assuming you'll come back on, I'm going to implement that on dates and give it a test run, and I'll be a sample size of one, and we'll see if you're right.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Yeah,
how about that?
Let me know. Let me know. That's really great.
I was actually going to say, which I don't normally do, and this is going to go long, but I don't care. I'm really enjoying chatting to you. Is there, it feels like you've done a lot of internal work, and you've thought a lot about, you've come to this relationship and this stage in your life the hard way, is the way that I would put it. You haven't, this hasn't all been handed to you. You've had to do the work to get to this point. Even the fact that you started dating relatively late, you know, compared to a lot of people, what's the biggest thing that you've learned, do you think, about dating and relationships through that life experience lens?
I don't know. The reason I started therapy was, I remember I was sitting at a bus stop, and I was just so miserable. Like, and I was like, I just don't want my life to be this. I don't want to be sad anymore. And I didn't really know what to do. I went to I mean, I think maybe it's just like I've got a lot of older friends as well, and they offer their love and their wisdom yeah, wisdom to me. And I had a friend going, well, have you ever thought about telling somebody about it? And again, I come back to class, like, you know, I didn't know that therapy was a thing. I didn't, like, I certainly couldn't, like, my parents wouldn't have been able to afford any of that sort of stuff when I was a miserable teenager. And I think that from that, there is a curiosity that I got about myself and other people from, it's innate as well. Like, I just, generally, like, you know, we are artists, we do these things, and so we are interested in people and their worlds and what goes on for them and what makes their decisions theirs. But I think that's what it is, like, just trying to stay curious about why people are the way they are and why you are the way that you are. Because I don't think that anyone is a bad person. I think that there are lots of situations that form bad people. I mean, obviously, that's essentialist thinking, but I try and approach the world through the lens of no one. Sometimes people bring you their shitty moments and their shitty day or their shitty, but underneath that, there is somebody who just wants to laugh as well and hang out. And
I'm going to have a bit of a bet each way on that one, because I think very rarely, but I think that some people are just fucked and I think maybe they were born like that.
And I haven't worked in those trauma spaces that you've worked in, and I certainly haven't spoken to the women that you've spoken to doing your work, Nellie. And
it's rare though, Matt. I will give you that. Like, it is rare. Like, almost everyone's behaviour, even despicable behaviour, is explainable. But I think it's also really important in this context, particularly in dating, to go, even if I understand why, doesn't mean I stay.
100%. Yeah, that's actually really important, isn't it? It's like, just because you can pathologize somebody's behavior doesn't mean you should put up with it.
Yeah.
It, you know, it goes beyond the price of admission into that relationship for you. You should walk out. But then understanding that I mean, trying to hold it in yourself that you didn't cause that doesn't really have anything to you to. Sort of a theme through this chat has been that, hasn't it? Yeah. We've sort of touched on that a little bit.
And you don't have to demonize them either. You know, it can be enough to sit on that date and kind of go, look, I can see, for whatever reason, there could be cultural reasons, financial, a whole range. You might go, okay, well, you've done no internal work. You haven't been able to. You've chosen not to, whatever it is. I don't think you're a terrible person, but you're not for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You
are
for me though, Matt. You
same,
are.
Same, Nellie. Same. Can I just say, Nellie, also, if you're in a restaurant and you're feeling like you shouldn't be there because of you have an inherited class anxiety, like, that is ridiculous to me. I'm sorry, so sorry to dismiss that feeling. You just should ask them what every fucking thing on the menu is. Like, be the working class person that you are proudly in that situation, because you work fucking hard to get the money to go to those spaces. Never apologize for being in there and being like the person. Because chances are that the waiter that you're talking to comes from our stock.
Yeah.
And they're like going, oh, basically it's just a fancy way of saying, like, soup.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's pumpkin. It's true. Who do you think ends up talking to the wait staff all night? This bitch.
this guy too.
You're so right. It's one of the things, there's some things I just accept about myself now that I go, I've also got enough insight to go, no, I'm not going to work on that. And I've talked about those things before and they don't hurt anyone. That's one of the things I am working on. That imposter thing, it's not real, you know, and I have every right to be there. Yeah. And it means nothing if I don't understand the menu.
It's
a work in progress.
Definitely. So that's just a sandwich?
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty much a sandwich.
I'll tell you what, if I end up on First Dates Australia, I'm ordering the ribeye. I'll tell you that much. And if I want it well done, I'll fucking do it.
Yeah, get it. Get curly fries.
Oh, you're an absolute delight. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
All right. Thanks, Nellie. Yeah. I've had a lovely chat. It's been
Me
wonderful.
too.
Yep. Nice to
All
see
right.
you.
Love you. Bye.
Love you too. Bye.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice, dear Nellie. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nellie. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nellie. There's a lot to explore, dear Nellie. When you're 40 or more, dear Nellie. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nellie. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team, and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.